tradition and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
Back, I was curious. I think where did I see this? I think Stuart Mandel put this out. Based on last night's rankings, I think that's what it was. Yeah, who put it out? Oh, yeah. Stuart Mandel came up with a mock lineup of what the playoffs would look like. The first game would be Tulane at Michigan on a Friday night. Can you imagine? The southernmost team versus one of the northernmost teams. That would be great weather. On Saturday, you'd have Louisville at Texas, Oregon State at Oregon. I mean, is that weird how that worked out? Missouri would be at Alabama. And then the quarterfinals, we're just projecting. We'd have Washington versus likely Michigan on January 1st, Florida State versus Oregon, Ohio State versus Texas. You'd have Georgia, Alabama in the quarters and the semis. Again, you can figure it out from there. But that's just that's where we are. I mean, we are literally this year the CFP. Just to give you some context, the CFP is on January 8th. Next year in Atlanta, it will be on January 20th. The season gets extended by 2 weeks. Trey is up next. How are you, Trey?
I'm good, Paul. A couple of things before I get to my more serious question. When AC calls on that Boost mobile phone, does he not sound like he's one of those in one of those tunnels over in Gaza or something like that? Is he not that hard for you to understand? I don't see how you make this guy out.
I understand his. I speak a few different languages, including incomprehensible. So I understand him.
And the second thing before I get to my point, that people don't realize how big the buyout was for Jimbo Fisher. He will be receiving $26,301 per day for the next 8 years. That's how big that buyout was, which is kind of ridiculous.
He will get more. He will get more in a day by $11,000 than I made for my first job out of school.
He'll get a lot more than me. I was making $205 an hour. But Paul, I want to throw something out at you, and I want to get your opinion. Again, I like to pick your brain. This lawsuit or whatever these players are doing, wanting TV revenue money. After I give you my opinion, I'd like to hear your response. Paul, is that not like the same thing as you demanding a percentage of ESPN's revenue because of your show and the SEC network, or a server who works at a restaurant demanding a revenue from the owner of the restaurant? And I just don't see that being feasible. And I see this going to the Supreme Court. And I probably see it being shot down, and I would really like to hear your opinion on that.
Because there's a lot out there. Trey, there's a more pressing matter right now in the courts that we'll be hearing a lot about. But again, unlike someone like me, you agree to a contract. So once you – there goes some
I agree, but Paul, it's your choice to play football now. You don't have to play football and agree to policy or rules or things like that. That's
correct.
What this country's built on in capitalism. So I was just curious to get your opinion on it, and I appreciate you taking my call, and I got a better question for you tomorrow. You have a great day, Paul.
I can't wait. Thank you. I'm always looking for a good question. Galen is in Texas. Hello, Galen.
Hey, how you doing, Paul?
Great.
I can't wait till next year and see this playoff. I hope I live long enough. I'm 80 years old, so I don't know if I'm going to make it.
Hang in there. You'll love it.
Listen, I got a couple of things. I've heard y'all talk about General Neely from Tennessee and how he's held in such high esteem. And I know you might be aware of it, but I bet your audience is not. A&M has a great general hero, too, General Earl Rudder. I don't know if you knew him.
I
knew of him. He was a hero at the D-Day invasion. And he graduated in 1832, got a commission, and he stayed in reserves. And when 41 comes, they call him back to active duty, and they gave him a task of climbing the cliff believe it's quite the Hawkeye. I'm not pronouncing it correctly, but it's depicted in a movie, Longest Day, if you've ever seen that. And anyway,
I have, yeah.
He trained those guys to get up there and take those.
Hey, Galen, for some reason I'm losing you. I don't know if you're moving or if you could get a little closer to where maybe. I really want to hear this story. So you said it was depicted in The Longest Day?
Yes, it was.
So The Longest Day is, I'm going back to my youth, but that was about D-Day, was it not?
Hey, correct. Okay. But anyway, he was in charge of that, and can you imagine motivating a bunch of guys to climb a cliff 100 feet with grappling hooks and ropes, ladders, and guys are on top of this cliff shooting down at you and dropping grenades?
No.
But he pulled it off, and I think they suffered like 50% casualties. But you know what he was doing when he was called back to active duty?
No.
He was a high school football coach in Texas.
That's amazing.
And anyway, he was the president of A&M the whole time I was there. He was held in very high esteem. And
well, it's interesting because General Welsh, I saw we had him on a couple of weeks ago when we were in Aggieland. He just got selected to be the full-time president.
He did? I didn't know that.
Well, it was recommended. He was the only candidate recommended, so there's a 20-day wait period, but he will be the next president. And I am really thrilled.
Very good.
What an outstanding individual. And I didn't spend more than 25 minutes with him, but I was blown away by him.
I'm delighted to hear that. That's going to be a good move, I think. But anyhow, I was going to tell you, General Rutter died in 1970 with a cerebral hemorrhage, I believe. And if he hadn't died, I really think that Gene Stallings might have stayed up there and completed his coaching career because he put out a lot of Gene. And I was disappointed when they let Gene go, but
well, I mean,
I don't
Gene,
have very much to say so.
He was, I'm glad you brought up Coach Stallings because I hate to tell the story over and over again, but I got really a good taste of him. I was asked to be at it was about 10, 12 years ago. Would it have been the 40th, 50th anniversary? Whatever it was, they brought the whole 60, I think it was 68 team back together.
The Junction Boys?
No, not the Junction Boys, but it was his team. The team that beat Coach Bryant in 68.
Oh, yeah, that was 67, I believe.
67, okay.
68.
It was 68 Cotton Bowl on January 1st. Well, Jackie Sherrill asked me to come out for that, and all of his players that were still alive were there, and it couldn't have been the 50th anniversary, but it was probably the 40th. But it was an amazing night to hear the reverence for Coach Stallings by his former player. I mean, I knew a lot of Alabama players that played for him, but I'd never met the entirety of the Texas A&M group.
Gene's had an interesting life and an interesting career, you know, and His book about he and his son just brought tears to my eyes, I'll tell you. But do you know when
season,
he played
yeah.
football at Parrish, Texas High School, do you know who his coach was?
I do not.
Raymond Berry's daddy.
Oh, my goodness.
And he was a teammate of Raymond Berry at Parrish High School.
That's amazing,
isn't it?
Story.
He really is. But
I covering Coach Stallings at Alabama was really just – it was 10 years after Coach Bryant, and you could close your eyes and hear Coach Bryant as Coach Stallings talked. I mean, they were so similar.
Yeah, they were, I'll tell you. Second thing I want to talk about very briefly, too, you know, I had such high hopes this year about the Aggies, and I thought, man, we finally found us a Joe Burrow-type quarterback, and he gets hurt, and then come along and play a lousy game against Miami and also then Alabama and Tennessee. But when he played Mississippi and made those two glaring errors, I thought, good Lord, you know, that's pretty bad. So myself and a lot of other Aggies lost him on that deal. But what do you think about him as a coach?
I'm not making excuses for Jimbo because I agreed with the decision. But I think if Wegman had not been injured, we probably wouldn't be at this juncture.
I hope you're right. I don't know. I hope he comes back. I'm not sure now any of these guys are going to come back unless they get somebody real fast to turn things around up there.
I think that's the issue. And you hear all these names being mentioned, pro coaches that may be in the CFP, but you know, 2 weeks from now, it already is open season, but they have to have a coach fairly quickly, or otherwise that place will look like a ghost town.
Let me ask one last question, Paul. Do you know what a goat head is?
A goat head?
A goat head.
A goat head.
Goat head. It's not a sticker or a sandbar or anything like that. It is a thorn. And if you fall down in a patch of goat heads, you're going to hurt very badly. And supposedly, there at Junction, they had a patch of goat heads. These guys would fall down and practice in. I can't imagine that. I'll try to find a goat head and mail it to you.
No,
it's a thorn.
I told this
Galen
once to Coach Bryan's grandson, who's a close friend of mine. I said, if Coach Bryan had pulled that today, he'd be in jail for what he did to those players at Junction. But fortunately, it was a different time. He wouldn't have done it today, of course. Hey, thank you very much. We're up against a break. We will be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Ari Wasserman a few minutes away. Let's check in with John, who is up next from Louisville.
Hey, good evening, Paul. How you doing?
We are doing great. Thank you.
That was a great story on General Reuter.
It was.
I think they suffered over 50% casualties, those U.S. Rangers, and then they get to the top and the guns have been moved back a few miles, so it was a pretty sad deal. But before I get to the two orphans in the Pac-12, I have to ask you, have we not heard from Legend?
Legend is MIA.
Well, his top five hot takes are now stale dated, so they're cold takes. And I know he's a TV star and celebrity chef, but he needs to remember this show made him the legend, and I'll leave it at that. But I saw the court judgment, divorce case of Oregon State and Washington State. And by the way, I noted that none of the parties wanted custody of George Kliakoff. We'll leave it at that.
George currently is conducting business from the San Francisco Public Library. He doesn't have an office.
Which is closed, by the way.
Exactly.
Yeah, I know. I know Oregon State and Washington State got the checking accounts, the house, the 401k pension, all that. But where do they go next year, Paul?
I don't really know or care. Do you?
No, I'm just curious. They've got some money. Somebody should adopt
them,
it seems to me.
Maybe go buy a league somewhere.
Yeah. So just my thoughts on the coaches. I think Mike Elko would be a good cultural fit for Texas A&M. I think Leopold would be a cultural fit for Michigan State. Kellen DeBoer has been mentioned for Texas A&M, but I think you're hearing, too, Chip Kelly may be gone at UCLA. So I think he should go down the road to UCLA.
Yeah, I view that UCLA job, because Kelly is gone, I believe, as a pretty attractive job.
Yeah, I think
now,
it would
I
be.
I mean, it's
going
more attractive
the Big
than
Ten.
It was. I mean, now being in the Big Ten, it makes that a marquee landing spot. I bet Coach Prime regrets going to Colorado. UCLA would have been perfect for him.
Oh, I agree, and I'm not going to bash on bash. Others are doing that. But do you notice he doesn't talk about Colorado or Neon anymore, Deion Neon?
Yeah, all he knows how to do is say, Mr. Feinbaum, how are you doing?
Yeah. Hey, Paul, I heard a reliable rumor, and you can check it out, that Randy's interviewing with the Big Ten Network.
Randy, any truth to that?
No.
Randy likes to be around winners.
Well, he told me to say that because he's trying to leverage for one less working day a week and
Randy,
a pay raise.
Randy,
so.
If Randy cut down his days by half, he'd only be here a half a day.
He'd be a no show. Good show, Paul.
Thank you. John is up next. Hey, John.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
We are well. Thank you for asking.
Good. I was earlier in the week, it could have been Monday or Sunday, but you were talking about we could be in the same situation as we were last week about as far as, you know, firing coaches and whatever. Is in in the SEC, who do you think we might be talking about next week at this time?
Well, I mean, I think you have, I don't think it's hard to come up with. I mean, there's one coach who hasn't won a game, won an SEC game all year. I don't think he's in trouble because it still feels like there is some progress. There's another coach who just got blown out by a first-year coach the other day, and then another coach could possibly end up with seven losses at a five-star gold standard program. So, what do you think?
Are you talking about the SEC?
Well, that was the league I was talking about, but I could expand it if you want.
No, that's fine. I was just talking about the SEC. I think personally, Arkansas, Kentucky, Vanderbilt, and Florida.
Well, I don't see. I don't think Mark Stoops is in any danger whatsoever. Pretty sure he just agreed to a new deal a year or so ago. So I don't see Mark Stoops being on this board at all. I mean, he won 10 games two years ago, didn't he?
What's that?
I think he had a 10 win season 2 years ago.
Yeah, I'll just
think the action to watch would be in Missouri. Where is that Arkansas game next week? Fayetteville? I think Friday a week, I'm very curious about how Arkansas plays against Missouri. I think that is a really big game for Coach Pittman, and I don't know how to handicap the Florida situation. Yeah, there's the Arkansas schedule. So, I mean, let's just play this out for a second. Arkansas is either going to finish the season 5-7 or 4-8. What do you think a 4-8 record sounds like in Fayetteville?
Well, I think 4-8 just doesn't sound good anywhere.
And last year, Arkansas was 7-6, is that right? So that's a bad trend line right there.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that's it. That's interesting. And as far, I want to ask you on the Heisman voting, I don't want to ask who you vote for, but I wanted to ask that, what is the earliest you've made a decision and what is generally the time you make a decision on the Heisman voting?
I don't want to just say this to try to be a good citizen, but I mean, there are years, I think last year, Caleb Williams, even before the championship game, he looked like the winner. I don't think it was all that difficult a choice. I think this year will be a very difficult choice. I normally vote, the ballot is due on Monday afternoon. I have voted as late as Monday morning. I will tell you that. You vote online. It used to be that you mailed it, and they quit doing that because there were a lot of elderly sports writers that did not want to wait. It's just, and now that it's online, it really doesn't matter. You don't need to. I don't even think you can vote until there's a certain spot where you can vote. And
well, I mean, what is that time? So now what we're saying now is what is the time? Is there only one time you can vote at one day?
No, I don't know. When I get the communication, and I quite frankly, I haven't seen it, yet, when you get, they'll send you what the Heisman Trust does is this, they will send out a communique to you. They'll send out an email with your password. And then they'll send you the link, and then you have to use your password to get in to vote. And what you do then is you sign in and you put down three You only vote for three people. You spell it out, 3-2-1-2-3, and then you send it off, and it's over. So I have voted on last year. I remember sitting around doing some TV stuff on the final day of on the selection show day, and I voted. But I usually try to vote Monday morning just so I see the last possible game.
Right. That's what I'm saying is what date is that?
It would be the December 4th would be the deadline. Anyway, by the way, we have an update. Update here. Legend has updated us on his condition. He is alive. He is well. He is not well, though. Legend has been under the weather, hoping to be around tonight at about 6 p.m. So the return of Legend, 30 minutes away. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Well, what is going on in all these coaching searches? The Athletic doing a deep dive on A&M, and is it a great job, and what are they going to end up with? Nobody knows the landscape better than Ari Wasserman from The Athletic. Ari, thank you so much. Always a pleasure to have you on. So tell us where we are a couple of days after the big bombshell. Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for having me on. I always appreciate it. All I know is that I think that Texas A&M is a better job than people think it is. And there are a lot of reasons for it. I wrote a column on The Athletic today about it. First of all, we can start with just what it has. You know, there are very few programs, maybe 10 or 15 total, that have every single thing already in place that's good enough to win a national championship in the current landscape of our sport. They have the geography and access to talent. They have a lot of money and resources and an administration that's bought into doing what it can to win. I don't think Jimbo Fisher heard no very often during his tenure there. They have a large and passionate fan base, a large stadium, great facilities, and you know, everything that you could ever need at your disposal to win a national championship. And then on the secondary of that, when they are going to be courting coaches and trying to hire somebody, they've already shown a willingness to pay more than $70 million to make somebody go away. That is a very enticing thing because to me, if I'm a coach, I say, you know, two things can go here. One, I can go to Texas A&M and be the first coach in modern history, or if ever, really, depending on who you ask, to win big. And they can build a bronze statue of me outside of Kyle Field, or I can fail miserably, and my grandchildren's grandchildren can go to private school off of my earnings. That's a pretty solid and compelling sales pitch. And to me, I personally think that could sway more people than we're giving credit for. So, you know, being 2 years away, or sorry, removed from Lincoln Riley leaving Oklahoma and going to USC, and Brian Kelly going from Notre Dame to LSU, and of course Mario Cristobal going from Oregon to Miami. There's a lot of these coaching lists out there that have interesting names and people that make sense, that fit, to have past experience at A&M and all that stuff. But what if a coaching candidate falls from the sky that we aren't considering because that package is too much to pass up? It's a possibility. I don't know that that person is out there the way that Lincoln Riley was, but this is a crazy sport and crazy things happen, and A&M has a lot to offer. And if somebody wanted to tell me that was a top 10 job, I think that's all but a certainty, and even a top 5 job, I'll listen to the argument.
There, I mean, I'm not going to go through the whole list because it's endless, but someone said something to me the other day about Dabo Swinney, and I know it came up in one of his news conferences, but he is one of the unique people out there, though. Not that he resembles Jimbo Fisher, but he does have two national championships and an endless number, I think it's 6 college football playoff appearances, and he's going through a really tough cycle. Is that even a realistic possibility, or does he not fit what you think they're looking for?
Well, I think that that's a two-pronged question, and, you know, honestly, I don't know how realistic that actually is, but also, too, you know, we're, what, 3 weeks removed from an emphatic radio appearance in which he said that the desire or the expectation outweighs the appreciation of what they've accomplished. So, you know, if he is in the midst of a tough year and feels as if the fan base or the university is not appreciative of what he built there, then I guess you could come up with a fairy tale in your head that says, hey, you know what, he might go somewhere that's in the SEC that has all the same resources that, you know, Clemson has, if not even more, and try to do something new somewhere else. Because he is, you know, for all of his, you know, drawbacks or things that he's done over the years that make you scratch your head, he is the only coach in college football that has gone to a solid program and turned them into a power. Everybody else is hiring, trying to do that. That's what Texas A&M is doing right now. And how many other people outside of Dabo can you say actually did it? That said, I don't necessarily think that a person who has been reluctant to embrace the full scope of NIL and certainly hasn't used the transfer portal to the best of its potential really fits into what somebody is trying to do at A&M. And frankly speaking, considering they're in the midst of a four-loss season and things don't seem to be trending in the right direction there, it also seems kind of similar to the way that things were trending at Florida State when they hired Jimbo. So, you know, this is a very complicated situation, I think, because on one hand, A&M has got the money and the motivation to hire a big fish that makes a splash. But on the other hand, I don't think that making a big splash in the press conference is necessarily always an indication of whether or not you're going to win there. There have been a lot of coaches in the past that, you know, recent past that have been can't-miss home run hires that haven't gone very well. And sometimes I wonder if what A&M needs now, more so than anything, as a football coach who can functionally run the program on a day-to-day basis, recruit at a pretty high level with the help of whatever NIL, you know, aid that they would have, and try to assemble an elite level roster like the one that they currently have and just be a really good football coach. Like, I don't think they need a rock star, but I feel like A&M.
So, Ari, if I was asking you to bring me in three finalists, who would they be?
If it were my choice, is it my choice or what?
Yeah,
I think
it's your choice.
I think I would do Mike Elko, Jeff Traylor, and Dan Lanning if that was still a possibility. I think Dan Lanning would be the best home run hit that they could get, but he just emphatically said that he didn't want to do that. So, you know, sometimes I don't know how much to believe whenever a coach says something in the midst of a season in which they're trying to go for a national championship. But to me, if you could go get a guy that is young, knows how to recruit, understands what it was like to build at Georgia and is doing the same thing at Oregon, and you drop him in the middle of Texas and you put him in the same division as Alabama and you give him all that money and resources when it comes to recruiting and NIL support, that man will win a national title there, I think, in 2 or 3 years, depending on how much exodus there is off of the current roster. That would be my home run hire.
Yeah, Ari, you've covered the sport a while. We all have. Statements on a Wednesday about or Tuesday about not being interested in a job is really smart because he has critical games remaining. He doesn't want that question again, and that was a good way to shut it down.
Yeah, I mean, like, he went above and beyond. I mean, sometimes coaches say, hey, I'm not interested and I'm focused on this week. I mean, he really hammered it home that Oregon is a place that he wants to spend a lot of time. And frankly speaking, Oregon is a place that has a lot of support, too. And it's going to a Big Ten conference that's going to shower that program with money. And they've got that Phil Knight money, too. So the only drawback to Oregon, I would say, that Texas A&M has that they don't, is proximity to talent. I mean, Oregon's out there in no man's land, and I guess recruiting is becoming more and more national as we continue on into the sport's future. But I would want to be in the state of Texas and be around 15 to 20 top 100 players a year and try to build it that way, because I'm sure it's very hard to get kids on the airplane for unofficial and official visits and to actually sign there. And if you go look at the numbers right now of what A&M has on its roster, I think it's only one of four teams in the country that has 10 5-stars.
So we, on that subject, before you go, because I've spent a lot of time on A&M, but I want to get your final thought. I've quoted you 1,000 times from an appearance on this show earlier in the year during good Alabama weeks and bad about the talent on that team and how impressed you were. Taking what you told us, I think it was in August, about this maybe the most talented roster, I'll let you fill in the blanks of exactly how you put it. What are your thoughts now on where they are and what they can accomplish?
Well, I didn't know that Jalen Milroe was going to go from liability to one of the most electrifying players in 6 weeks. I think they could win the national title this year. On my podcast, I put it this way, and you can borrow this too, Paul. There's a group A of teams right now that are alive for the national championship who have 10 or more five-star prospects and a deeply talented roster that would dwarf anybody else that was compared to. Those three teams are Ohio State, Alabama, and Georgia. And Group B is the field. Who do you think is going to win the national championship this year? This is a whole sport that loves parity and the thought process of who's going to get in, is Washington underranked, and all these different secondary issues. But the fact of the matter is that in this time, the internet era of recruiting rankings since 2000, there have only been three teams in the history of that 20-year period that have won a national championship having not signed a top five class in the previous 4 years. That's twice at Clemson. Again, Dabo genius, right? But they developed some really good players. And then, of course, there was the Auburn year with Cam Newton. And what do those three teams have in common? Legitimately generational talents at the quarterback position between Trevor Lawrence, Deshaun Watson, and Cam Newton, and all three of those teams signed multiple top 10 classes the previous 4 years. So they still had a lot of talent. I think that Alabama is one of the three teams who will eventually win the national championship this year. Will it be Ohio State, Alabama, or Georgia? Until the transfer portal shows up and becomes the ace in the hole that completely makes the talent rankings irrelevant, and it happens one time, I'm going to always be in the camp of the teams with the best players win the most.
Yeah, I guess you've given away your Ohio State-Michigan pick, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, that's been a pretty tricky game to cover. And then, like, honestly, it's been, like, the biggest exception to the entire talent rule. and it'll be interesting to see how much Michigan's, cheating scandal had anything to do with their ability to knock them off the way they have the last few years. Maybe it hasn't at all. But it's certainly a game in which if you're catching points, and I got caught, the last 2 years, thinking Ohio State was going to win with those points, the fact that they're an underdog, I think getting the better players and the points is a pretty good, way to go when you're looking at the sport. So
I
think Ohio State's probably going to win.
A cheating scandal based on some of the Michigan people that I've been on TV with this week. It's not Michigan's fault. It's our fault at ESPN.
I wrote two columns about Michigan in the past week, and one I think was semi-pro Michigan and one was anti-Michigan. In terms of positivity and negatively, and I've gotten the full wrath. I will say this. I'm not necessarily sure I agree with the Big Ten's decision to quasi-suspend him. I thought if they had enough information to suspend him, they should have just actually suspended him and, like, removed him from the facility until, further updates. This half suspension before getting all the information seems a little bizarre to me. That said, I don't feel bad for them. And the way that they've played the victim, both from the head coach calling it America's team to the president of the university tweeting out something as if a tragedy just happened, just kind of blows my mind. So we're going to find out a lot more about this. There's a lot of questions that need to be answered about this Michigan scandal. But if anybody is playing a violin in Ann Arbor, your day is coming because there's a lot of information that's already proven out there and there's probably more to come. And I don't know. The one thing that is interesting to me, Paul, covering Ohio State for as many years as I did and covering, national college football for the last four, is that it is unbelievable to me how a fan's brain can stop functioning when their favorite team is under fire. It just doesn't – they cannot grasp why and how stuff's happening, and they truly can't. And, it's not a Michigan fan thing. It's an every fan thing. When your favorite team's in trouble, you discredit the authors. You say it's a conspiracy at ESPN, and – you come up with any plan that you can possibly can to get the escape route, and then one day you're inevitably met with the truth of what happened, and when that happens, there's no more deniability. So in the next few months, Michigan can pretend like nothing happened, and eventually when the other shoe falls, we can all move on with our lives. But that's just kind of the way it is with fans.
Ari, thank you very much. Really, really appreciate it. Ari Wasserman, and I think you made one point that I want to follow up on as we head to the break. As goofy as Harbaugh has been in this, the biggest joke at Michigan is Santa Ono, the president. I mean, he's Harvard PhD, the University of Chicago, you would think this guy would know better, but you might as well put a clown nose on him the way he's been handling what is going on out there for the leader of the university to act that way. We'll take a short break. We're back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And Clint is up next as we close out hour number three. Good afternoon. Hey, Clint, you there?
Oh, yeah.
Paul is up next in Georgia. Hey, Paul.
Hey, Paul. Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. I'm a first-time caller. And I just have two things I want to say. I had a real crack from what you said this morning to Dez about how we win real championships down here in the South.
Yeah,
and that's what you worry
about. I was trying to be respectful because he is, after all, Desmond Howard. But
of course.
He's bragging about two Michigan Big Ten championships, and I couldn't help but let him know that SEC is not about that.
I wouldn't be able to help myself either, I'll tell you what. But the second thing I want to say is, Hottie Toddy, we took him down. Rocky Top, we're going to wipe him out. And best believe we're going to roll over them Tide. Go Dogs! And that's all I want to
say. You need to be Georgia Tech in there, too. Chip is in Mississippi. Hey, Chip.
Hey, Paul. This is Chip from Mississippi. I'm a first-time caller, South Carolina fan. Live in Columbus, Mississippi, and have to pull for the small-town team. I had a name that I haven't heard mentioned about the coaching possibilities. We're thrilled at South Carolina. We got a coach from a coaching family and Coach Beamer, and wonder what you think about possibly Skip Holtz going to Mississippi State.
You know, Skip has done a phenomenal job coaching the Birmingham team. It's a fascinating study. I mean, Chip's had a lot of jobs. He was at Louisiana Tech, I believe. He, you know, helped his dad a lot. It's an interesting name. I'll put it that way. I think somebody with experience is what they need, because Coach Arnett just simply was not quite ready for that stage.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.